A warning that this program contains explicit language that may offend some listeners.
I was born in New Zealand in a little town like you hear of Mudgee and all that, and Taree, a little town like that in the North Island in New Zealand. The town was called Tamanui, a population roughly of 10,000 people, which was mixed of white people and Maori. And we were just a poor battling family of 13 children. My real name is Trevor David John Rupi. I'm very proud of those names because I was named after my mother's father, who was an Englishman, David. And I was named after John, Trevor John, from my father, who was a Maori.
Carmen, 1996 Transsexual Diva of the Year. Hello and welcome to Verbatim. I'm Michelle Rayner. This week, a life story which travels from small town New Zealand to the streets of Sydney's King's Cross. Prostitution, the world's oldest profession, has been part of Australian life since colonisation. And Carmen has been working the streets of Sydney since the early 1950s. But before she came to Sydney, Carmen had a very different life and identity back home in New Zealand, one which involved, as she told Michaela Persky, being called up for national service when she was a young man called Trevor.
I got a letter. I was working in the hospital, a Cornwall hospital, and I got a letter, and the letter said from the government in Auckland, and the letter was from the army to say that I was picked to join the army. Well, I nearly fainted. I nearly collapsed. And we were called up for the 18-year-olds. It was compulsory military training for the teenagers. And I went along and I fainted again. They said, "You passed." And I was so scared. And then when I did pass, we all had to go to Papakura Camp in Auckland. That's the army camp. And I was so frightened because all the guys there were taking the mickey out of me and calling me a fairy and pansy when I was there with all the other army boys because they knew that I sort of looked camp and gay. And I was very scared and frightened. We all arrived on a Friday and I thought, I'd love to try and get out of this, but I really can't. And then on the weekend, we all went swimming. There's about 300 or 400 of us all swimming naked at the Papakura swimming pool, I decided I'll stay on.
So what, did you just have to train in the army?
What we had to do is you had to have a choice. You can be in artillery, you can be in infantry, you can be in medical, and you can be, wherever they put you. But I picked medical, which was looking after the wounded soldiers at the time I was there.
After finishing national service in the late 1950s, Carmen decided to leave New Zealand in search of a more cosmopolitan lifestyle. In those days, it was a 2-day boat trip from New Zealand to Australia, and Carmen had little idea of what lay in store for her in bright lights, big city Sydney.
When I first came to Sydney, I said to the taxi driver, "I'm looking for somewhere to stay." So he took me to the YMCA and I got accommodation there, and I thought, wow, all these gorgeous, beautiful men. And the most funniest thing was, I heard down at the breakfast table, I heard these men saying, "If ever you want a head job, go to Hyde Park and get picked up, because there's all the poofters, the queers and the queens and the pansies and sissies all go there looking for pickups." And so I couldn't believe what I heard. The next night I went along there and toddled over to Hyde Park. It was all lit up and there was just single men wandering around everywhere in the park waiting to be picked up. This is 1959. I thought, I couldn't believe my eyes. Anyway, I got picked up and the guy said to me, "Would you like to come for a joyride?" He took me to French's Forest. We did our thing and he dumped me there. So I had to sort of walk part of the way back and train the rest. So that was a lesson I learned listening to people talking at the kitchen, at the restaurant table.
Did you know what you were going to do with yourself when you came out to Sydney?
Yes, I did. But then I decided I was going to be work in hotels and restaurants. I worked for Rose Bay for Mr. and Mrs. Doyle and family, and they was just so kind and beautiful to me. And also I worked at the Chevron Hilton, but before that I was a street prostitute selling my body as a male prostitute on the wall in King's Cross. I found that an education which you don't see that in New Zealand, all the men standing along the wall.
When the only sound on the empty street is the heavy tread of the heavy feet that belong to a lonesome cop, I open shop. When the moon so long has been gazing down on the wayward ways of this wayward town, that a smile becomes a smirk, I gotta work. Love for sale. Appetizing young love for sale.
I was walking through the cross, and he said he was very friendly, and he stopped to say hello to me, an Aboriginal boy called Barry. And he's stopped with us now. I say a prayer for him because he was a lovely guy. Sadly, he died when he was 50, and I was 10 years older than him or more. And he came up and said to me, he said, "What a gorgeous-looking guy you are." He said, "What do you do for a living?" I said, "Nothing. I'm looking for a job." He said, "Do you want to come and work with me on the wall? I'm a male prostitute there." He said, "You do. You make a fortune." And I was sort of shocked and stunned, but I managed to get to the wall. And I did. I got a lot of work, and I made a bit of money just to get myself, you know, accommodation and food and pay the rent. And that's how it all started.
What was the clientele like back then?
Well, there was just, I think whatever it was, whether you were a male prostitute or a heterosexual prostitute, it was a different time, a different era. The men were out on the streets in cars looking for sex badly. You just stood there and you got picked up because you got to look at it this way. There was no male brothels in that era, and there were brothels for girls in Chapel Lane, Woods Lane and Palmer Street in those days. And so you could go to those places, but a lot of guys didn't want to be seen at the brothels, so they'd go down around their cars and pick up the male prostitutes or the drag queen prostitutes or the real girls on the streets. And the other thing was that it was also frightening because you don't know who you're going to pick up, the clients. And the more frightening thing was the police from Darlinghurst Police Station used to come round and grab us, take us to the police station and beat us up and give us a hiding. And one or two, not all the police there, they used to take our money, only one or two. And I'm not knocking the New South Wales police or King's Cross or Darlinghurst police. They're absolutely great. You know, they do a good job for all of us. But it was just that was a different time in the late 50s and 60s. The police, I think they were sad as they didn't like gay people or gay men. They used to pick us up and beat us badly. One police hosed me down. One beat me up, or several beat me up badly in the cells. And so they don't do it today, but that time, I think they just didn't like us at all.
Were there many other male prostitutes working up on the wall at that time?
Yes, there was. That era, they were all very nice and not smart and cheeky and druggy and, you know, rip you off and rob you. They were a different lot of guys there. And they would, we all worked in together too. You know, if you're broke and you never made a job, I'll go along and shout them a meal and then they'll shout me.
Just a little love affair. The morning beats a cup of coffee for starting off the day. Just a little loving when the world is yawning makes you wake up feeling good things are coming your way. This whole world wouldn't be half as bad.
In the period when Carmen was working as a male prostitute, cross-dressing was becoming more common, both in clubs and on the street. But at this stage, it was still illegal for men to dress in women's clothing, unless they were wearing male underwear, which allowed cross-dressers to claim that they were in fancy dress.
When was the first time that you put on a dress and did drag?
Well, it would be, you know, more or less, I did a little bit at home in New Zealand, but I really did it here, you see. And I looked quite good. I went to Andre's when I was making money. I went to the Pitt Street Andre's, then I was making all these wigs for drag queens. He made me a beautiful bodgy, widgy wig, and I bought my dress in King's Cross, and they had beautiful, elegant shops in those days, in that 50s, 60s era. And I bought my dress there, lovely red dress, and that's when I really started in the early 60s in Sydney. And then when the drag shows opened up, I started doing drag shows in the Jewel Box and Lay Girls doing spots, yeah.
So you were working during the day as a waiter?
Yes.
And then you'd dress up at night as a woman?
That's right. And also do a bit of cracking too on the streets on my night off.
Well, as a woman?
Yeah, as a woman.
This was in the late 50s?
And early 60s, yes.
Like, would you tell clients that you were...
No, I didn't tell clients that we were drag. I think it's better to be honest, but you didn't in those days because you were starving, broken, hungry. So you trick it by saying, I'll do French love, so you need to speak soft and feminine. You have to remember that. A guy might say, well, look, I'll pay £5 for sex. And you say, no, I'll do it for £3 because I've got my periods. See, that's what you did. You had your periods. Every client you met, you had your periods. Because they found out what you were, they beat you up or give you a hiding, because all the businesses, you see, was car jobs. And, you know, we had some rough guys and some heavy guys. I don't know how I'm still alive. And you just got some sadistic guys also that just want to get their thrills off and beat you up. But, boy, I must have a guardian angel up there all those years that were so sweet and kind to me.
What year was it that you started doing turning tricks as a drag queen?
You mean doing shows or street?
Street.
That was at the early 60s. That's right. Sort of 62, 63, 64, you know. We get picked up on a Friday. On the Monday we go to court and drag, and we've got 5 o'clock beards hanging. And I thought that was the most funniest thing. You know, here's these bearded ladies, you know, going into court and with growth beards. I remember another time I liked this judge. There was 10 prostitutes and me went into court. I was the only drag queen. And so the judge was, you know, said, I'll take all the prostitutes now, get them all out of the way. So I was with 10 girls and I was the only drag. So he says, £5 fine for all you girls. And for you, Carmen, £3 for you, you know, something like that, you know. And the girl said, just a minute, why Carmen got £3 and we got £5? And I said, because I'm only half a woman, not a real one. And everyone laughed.
At night I work in a strange bar, impersonating every star. I'm quite deceiving. The customers come in with doubt and wonder what I'm all about. But leave believing. I do a very special show where I am nude from head to toe. After strip-teasing, each night the men look so surprised. I change my sex before their eyes. Tell me if you can, what makes a man a man?
Drag, men dressing up in women's clothes, became popular in Sydney's nightclubs like Lay Girls in the late 1960s and led to more and more transsexuals working the streets. Carmen watched the rise of drag on stage and on the streets, and she decided to head back home and sprinkle a little bit of glitter over her hometown of Wellington, New Zealand.
I went back to New Zealand and I thought to myself, well, I might open up my own coffee bar and club, which I did. I had it for 10 years.
So what year did you go back to New Zealand?
It'd be 68.
Tell me about your cafe. What was it called and what was it like?
Well, my cafe was called, I had two places. It was called Carmen's International Coffee Lounge, and my nightclub was called The Balcony, and it was very, very beautiful. I painted the whole place red because I thought it would be nice. It looks bright and nice and lovely pictures and ornaments all around. And I had drag queens working for me in my coffee shop, which was the draw card because they were all beautiful and elegant. At my nightclub, I had drag queens stripping and the girls, but we never said anything because we thought it spoiled the illusion. So we used to mix them all up and the guys could never tell. They were so fascinated. We used to always have pack houses every night and every week. We're very lucky.
When you first went back to New Zealand and you opened your cafe and your nightclub, was there any drag in New Zealand at that time?
Yes, there was. There was drag. And it was very, and I never told the people, they didn't spring me. When I went for the council to open up a coffee shop and a hall and entertainment nights, they didn't know that I was drag because I've been living in Sydney so long. And so I got the license, and then a reporter sprung that I was drag. He wrote this big article that the lady Carmen owns the coffee shop is actually a man and not a woman. And little did he know, it was a draw cup. My coffee bar was full. People were fascinated. And I was open 7 nights a week, and people would come in at 6 o'clock because the hotels close at 6 in that era. And the people would all come in and never go till about 3 or 4 the next morning.
Did New Zealanders embrace what you were doing?
Some of them were good. Some of them couldn't believe it. Some were fascinated and some were curious. But all I was worried about is, long as I kept with the rules and regulations with the health department, well, I make sure I had a nice, clean coffee bar and nightclub because you don't know when they're going to walk in. And so it didn't worry me. I thought, as long as I've got those permits, I'm okay. And I did get it. I was lucky.
And you also, while you were back in New Zealand, tried to get into politics, didn't you?
That's right. I thought it was absolutely wonderful. A guy came up to me and he said to me, why don't you try and be mayor of our city? Because we know that you're bright and alive in the city up, because it's very straight and square. So I put my name on the list for the mayor of our capital city. I came third. And they printed all big photographs and pictures of me, vote Carmen. And my slogan was sort of like, get on behind. It was amazing. All these people were voting for me. So I thought it was pretty, pretty good because it was 7 guys going for the mayor. And for me to come third, yeah, it was great.
What year did you run for mayor?
75. It was 1975. It was great. It was wonderful.
How did your family react to that? I mean, your mother and father were dead by now.
Yeah, oh, yes, they had gone.
But how did your brothers and sisters? They
thought it was wonderful. I'm very blessed and lucky because I've got 3 sisters left and 7 brothers, and they're very, very lovely, and they're very straight living, and they send their children to me. Well, they're all grown up now over here. When they have a holiday, they come and see me, so that's lovely.
How did they feel when you came back and you were dressed as a woman?
Well, I already had told them while I was in Sydney that I was doing drag queen and female impersonating shows, and then I told them that I was having little bits of alterations and operations done, and they were all for me. They were very nice because they said, well, you expected it anyway because you were very feminine and very girlish at home, you know, helping my mother with the shopping, the cooking and the cleaning. They said we sort of expected it, so I was lucky. It sort of fell into place.
So when did you stop living a double life, Carmen, and when did you become Carmen, just Carmen all the time?
I gave that actually in Sydney, in King's Cross. I would say about 64, I gave away men's clothes and decided to live permanently as a woman, yeah.
How difficult was it to make that decision?
It was okay, it was fine. The only frightening bit was the police wouldn't leave us alone. They spring you straight away. And I remember walking through the cross one time and I had this wig on and I was in this very beautiful jeweller's shop having a look at some jewellery, and he ripped my wig off right in front of everybody and told me to get into the car. So I had to get into the car and got beaten up again. And then he told me, saw me on the street again, he's going to lock me up. So I didn't go out that day again. I had a rest till my wounds were healed. You usually have to wait, stay at home for about 3 or 4 days till your wounds are healed, and you've got to be brave and go out again. But not only that too, with the police being very heavy on the streets, all us drag queens were on the street as prostitutes also in our drag days. There were real girls on the street saying, get off the street, these are ours, we'll tell the cops, you know, even the heterosexual girls, these are for us, not for you drag queens. So we had trouble again, you know, we were sort of all nervous, you know, we couldn't relax because of the cops coming, and there was the real girls telling us, the street girls, get off the street, and then we had to be careful, we're not going to get these heavy clients. So you just, God, I don't know how I've done it.
Because it was illegal to dress as a woman, wasn't it?
That's right, it was illegal, and you had to wear men's underpants if you were working in shows. And the other frightening part was also when we did go and do drag shows, we had to run for the taxi. You know, if any cops and you, taxi, taxi, you got to dive in there and you lay down, you know, you have to lay down until they've gone, you know, because they stop the taxi and pull you out and you've got to get out and there's another free facelift coming up. It was terrible.
So when did you come back to Australia?
I came back in 80. I got a fright when I came back because everything changed. I was still sort of thinking about the past again, but it had changed for the good.
The protest started with a rally in a Darlinghurst park where a musical group highlighted anomalies in the law.
The penalties for rape today, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, is 7 years in Old Long Bay, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. But if you're really courting trouble, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, sleep with me, the term is double, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
By the time Carmen returned to Sydney, prostitution had been decriminalised and attitudes towards homosexuality had changed enormously. The city had seen its first gay Mardi Gras and laws regarding cross-dressing and street workers had also loosened up.
Like, the police were not allowed to touch drag queens and beat them up and give them a hiding. And guys that I got involved with heavy scenes, like, that I knew from way back had died. Then I realised, shucks, I'm unemployed, I haven't got a job. And thanks goodness to street prostitution, I had to go back on that again. And then I found myself, well, I'm a little bit old and all these other street drag queens are beautiful and young and pretty because I was well in my 40s. And in that time I thought, God, I'm unemployed, I don't think I'll get much work. But I got enough just to get me going for my flat and my meals and pay the rent and the power, so I was happy. You just felt more relaxed and you're not frightened looking around anymore for all the police. And so that was very, very good. And I think that the Mardi Gras community and all these gay community people who've come forward and stuck up for the rights for gay people and homosexual and lesbian, whatever, I think they've done a wonderful job.
When you came back and you had to go back and work on the streets, how had prostitution changed on the streets?
Well, I found it a little bit hard because there was lots and lots of girls. You know, you can count about 20, 30, 40 girls sometimes down in William Street. But see, in my time, there was only about half a dozen, you know, or 10 of us. So it wasn't so bad. And it was busy. And they've got lots of girls working. But now they've got transsexual and gay massage parlours today. So that's good too. You would never be allowed to have that in our 50 and 60 era, no way.
When you were in New Zealand, did you do any prostitution in New Zealand?
Just a little wee bit, you know. Even though I had the coffee bar and nightclub, I did the odd tricks.
Why is that? Did you enjoy it?
Well, I only did it with good-looking men, so I was lucky in my position as a nightclub owner. I can have a choice. In the time when I was in Sydney, you couldn't. You had to get money. But then I had bit of money then in New Zealand, so I was lucky as a proprietor and owner of the business. I can have a nice choice of men who came in, took them upstairs. See, we had coffee bar downstairs and we had the brothel upstairs.
So you were a coffee bar madam?
Yes, that's right. Society cafe madam, yes.
Carmen speaking there with Michaela Persky. Technical production today has been by Mark John and I'm Michelle Rayner. Hope you'll join me for another Verbatim, this time next week, here on Radio National.